Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 577 on Tuesday, the 7th of May, 2024. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we'll be scratching our heads at the moves from one EV maker. In new car news, we ask if AI was let loose with the crayons twice. And in points of interest, the list of the week is all rad, as the cool kids say. But first, we dive into some follow-up, and I will start with the fact that the EU has written to BYD, SAIC, and Geely to say that their lack of cooperation has freed its hands to impose higher penalties, according to the Politico article that we have linked in the show notes. As everyone should be very aware of now, the EU has investigated, or is in the middle of investigating, whether the Chinese electric car makers are unfairly helped by state subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, what the take on this is, yes, and this has really only been used to find out just how much, or try and estimate how much, but the EU has come out just before the president of China arrives in Europe to say, well, you haven't actually given us the information we want.
Mm-hmm.
All we can do is a best guess. Get ready for potentially hefty tariffs.
But it's starting to go both ways now, because just the other week, the Chinese government in Beijing has launched its own anti-dumping investigation into imports of European brandy.
Where does most brandy come from, Alan?
It comes from France. The Politico article does go on to say it was signaling its displeasure towards Paris, which lobbied behind the scenes for the EV probe. So I imagine it's a little bit frosty around the Elysee Palace right at the moment.
Yes. Well, that's interesting because the French car makers generally are not building their electric vehicles in China and importing them back here.
No.
Whereas the Germans seem to have quite happily taken advantage of local companies who have possibly been helped by the Chinese government in setting up, etc., and cutting costs.
Well, Volkswagen SAIC is completely problem-free at the moment.
Yes, absolutely.
As we covered the other week.
It should be noted as well that the EU is not investigating Tesla or anyone who makes a car out in China that is European-based and brings them back into Europe. It is only purely the Chinese companies who are bringing cars over here. And let's not forget that the percentage of these Chinese-made cars, particularly electric cars, is not that high compared to the more Western brands.
Yes, absolutely.
So no one say protectionism.
No.
Talking of EV makers, though, Alan. Well, maybe. Who knows for how much longer?
All depends on the whims of an eight-year-old, doesn't it? Yes, Tesla has given up. Oh, sorry. No.
That's next week's story.
This week's story is from Inside EVs, and it's Tesla even gives up on next-gen gigacasting. Tesla was talking about casting large parts of the subframe underbody of its car bodies in white, so instead of obviously doing what you do at the moment, which is you stamp loads and loads of pieces of metal, and then you weld all the pieces of metal, and then there's room for water to get in and rust and all sorts of things like that. The idea is that if we make this as one great big single casting, or even just two parts instead of the 70 little parts, then that's going to be better, faster, stronger, etc. They're not developing it anymore.
No, which no. Does make a lot of the industry that, again, has learned the wrong lessons from Tesla by leaping on to trying to ape this.
No, let's be honest here. This is not something that Tesla invented.
No.
One of those things which Tesla branded and then told everyone about, so it then became a thing.
No, because the whole production technique is what Smart did in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's not new. However, because Tesla did it, everybody suddenly had to look at it and pretend to take it seriously, and they've spent a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
When there are a lot of people in the industry who have questioned the validity, one, of it happening, and then two, all the downside, potential downside, sorry.
Oh, there's absolutely zero building for repair.
Well, that's it. Outside of the manufacturing process, there are an awful lot of downsides to this.
Oh, yeah. So there's all sorts of issues with servicing, as I say, repair, especially as, once again, they're in areas which are prone to getting damaged in crashes, all sorts of stuff like that.
I know I've put this out on Twitter, but if anybody knows of a timeline of all the decisions that have come out since the 10% workforce cull. Mm. Could they please point me towards it? Because there's been so much that's come out that I'm losing track. And there's been some really worrying, if you are interested in the company, worrying decisions or worrying actions that have happened. And I just like to keep a tag on it all.
It's just so screwed up. So I'm trying to work out if they're up or down at the moment. $184.76, up 2% over the course of the week.
Cool. Good.
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
Who knows? We've said that for how many years now?
Just don't get it. One last thing, Andrew, though. Roadside charging.
Yes.
From a telephone company.
Absolutely. We talked about this a couple of times now, that BT are going to convert or have a project to convert some of their green roadside telecom boxes that have previously wired up with copper wire so we could all talk to each other. Now we're all super fast fiber, but they aren't needed. But they are repurposing them to help enable on-street charging. And the first of the project is happening in Haddington, up in East Lothian. And I've been trying to find out how this is working, because obviously it coming straight from a green box will not work for most of these green boxes, because they're typically at the junction of a road, or it's not convenient for cars. I don't know whether this is actually where the power supplies come in and then they split off to on-street parking poles.
Yeah, well, we saw this in a rendering before, didn't we? One of these where it was the rendering was in Edinburgh. And then there were some poles from which you could then plug into and then charge.
Yeah.
Along the curbside. Because as you say, these are at junctions at the ends of roads, typically.
Mm.
And so, can't park there, mate. Yeah, it's just not safe, but it's a sensible place to put a junction box.
Yes.
It's hard for us to tell, because the image that's really been put out around this is one of the green cabinets with a BT van beside it. And
thankfully, electric van.
Is it?
Yes. You can just see the green.
Oh, it's got green up front of the number plate. Ah, I didn't think it was. Yes. So they've got an electric van parked near, in the vicinity of a green box, and that's the picture.
But I think it's a brilliant idea, and congratulations to whoever thought it up inside BT, that went, actually,
we've already got curbside power.
Yeah.
We don't need to run loads and loads of cables everywhere.
Right. Do you want to take us into new news now?
We start off this week. It is the annual Autocar Great Woman Awards, obviously the 2024 edition, and it celebrates the achievements of the most influential women across the automotive sector. The most influential woman has been named as the Ford of UK and Ireland boss, Lisa Brankin. Congratulations to her. That sounded really, really awards ceremony, drop of the name at the end there.
And we're very conscious that it's two men discussing this, by the way.
Every year we do that, and we say that. A whole long list of categories covering the sort of overall, which of course Lisa's just won, from executive, and then all the different areas of large companies. You know, manufacturing, it's Diane Miller, who's the plant director of Ellesmere Port, which of course is Stellantis plant.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. Congratulations, everyone. There will be a link to the full list and the Autocar article all about this in the show notes.
Yeah, what is very interesting for me is that it's not just car companies. It is suppliers. No. It is the seller of cars, and also helping to test vehicle technology as well. So I think we say this every year. We love this award. We think it's brilliant, as well as being sad that it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But it is great to see. And yeah, as you say, congratulations to everybody who's been nominated, let alone received an award.
The full list of all the winners and everybody who was nominated and everything is all, there's a special sort of Autocar microsite around that, which is linked from the story. Andrew, France again.
Yes, into France. And this is the news that the French car industry has agreed a strategy with the government. Now, I know that may come as a shock to anyone in the UK that these things can happen, but they have. And what has been agreed between the car makers and Macron is that they are going to produce 2 million electric or hybrid vehicles by the end of the decade. They are going to increase sales of electric vehicles by 2027 fourfold on what they are now. So that's quite a jump in 3 years.
Almost a million.
Yeah.
800,000.
And there is also comments from the French government about how they are helping this, or helping the consumer as well,
mm-hmm.
which will lead this demand and push from the car industry. I sit here in the UK very sad and depressed, seeing what it looks like when a government and car industry seem to be working together.
Yes.
And I have zero faith, whatever flavour of politician we have now or will have in the future, that that will change dramatically.
Yeah. A lot of it's to do with just the way French... how do I word this?
What, without being fired?
No. God, no. That happened years ago. So a lot of it's to do with sort of the way sort of people across different sectors of very, very high management in France do tend to come from a very small pool.
Okay.
And so they do actually know and speak to each other.
Ooh.
As opposed to maybe in the UK, where that hasn't really happened at the moment. And I don't mean they've all come from like Eton, Oxford, Cambridge. It's because they've all come from the technical Sciences Po, which is the political part. But then there's also all the various technical universities around Paris as well. Even if you are an engineering person, then it's held in the same kind of regard as being, I don't know, an art historian. Political sciences, let's just say that. Our historians pushing it. That sort of all pools together. The centralization of France aids these things.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, quite frankly, it's France is very good at industry and agriculture. And two things that our government doesn't appreciate that the UK is any good at are industry and agriculture. They think that it's all about finance.
What I find interesting to back that up is the finance minister, Le Marie, stating the choice that has been made is whether we want to be a country of producers or a country of consumers.
Yeah, whereas in the UK, we're just consumers.
Yeah.
They're embracing it the way that the Koreans, etc., already have done with this kind of stuff. And the good news for Europe as a whole is that Stellantis is basically a French company.
Mm.
And so apart from the Germans, then they're controlling right across everywhere, and that should be good for all of the countries that Stellantis has plants in. But do remember that it's France, so there will be a certain amount of centralization in France. And I say that as a massive Francophile, and that is not abuse or anything else like that. That's observation based on many years of working for a French company.
Okay, well, let's pull you out of the potential mire and... Can you tell us about Volkswagen poor design claims?
It just shoves me into a different mire, to be perfectly honest. There's an article in The Guardian, well-known motoring publication, which is headlined, VW owners claim poor design left cars open to parts theft costing £1,600. Thieves have been stealing adaptive cruise sensors, which are hidden neatly behind the badges. So you know how the badges these days are just plastic, often mica, which is transparent to infrared. And so the various sensors tend to be hidden behind them, because otherwise you end up with the whole, you know, the whole Audi looks like there are police flashes in the grill effect with the sort of two shiny bits. So it's trying to hide those. And it happens with Volkswagen. It happens with many, many, many brands. However, an owner is claiming that Volkswagen has bad design because the sensors for the cruise control are at the front of the car, and therefore, with a bit of jimmying, nefarious types can remove the badge and the sensors behind it to put into other things. Now, this is one of the challenges of all of the driver monitoring aids at the minute, is that they do require there to be sensors out in places where if you are caught in an accident, then they're going to get damaged or killed. And then there are the challenges of sourcing the replacement part. And, of course, the costs, because the cost of everything is going up, as we're all aware. And so what's happening here is people are pinching it.
Yeah.
And it is easier and quicker to go take it from another Passat, which might be parked in the street in parts of London. So you've got many cars all close together. It's like a scrapyard, really. You can just go along and take your bait. Yeah.
Supermarket shelves.
Yes, exactly. Just remove the sensors or catalytic converters that you need. That's happening. And this is being seen as poor design on Volkswagen's part. I don't think it is poor design, by the way. I think it's just the way of the world.
Yes. There are larger issues at play here,
yeah,
which have combined to create this unfortunate situation for the poor owner that has had that stolen. I mean, we're not mocking them for having it stolen in any way, but to claim that it's the car company's fault due to where it's located it shows a level of lack of understanding of the technology and how things have to be positioned.
I included catalytic converters there, but don't forget that then, of course, headlamps are another favourite. Exactly the same reason.
Yep.
Phenomenally expensive and right on the corners. We saw those terrible pictures of Porsches where somebody just got at them with an angle grinder to pull the headlamps. Similarly, Range Rovers and Land Rovers, similar deal removing them. But if they're already taking that from your Land Rover, you're doing all right.
Yep.
Lots of bits and pieces like this. So it's just that, you know, exposed sensors on corners of vehicles where they get damaged, where people need to replace them, where there isn't a supply through proper channels means people will find a supply through improper channels. And that's what's happened here. I don't think it's anything to do with Volkswagen and poor design. I mean, I'm sure they'd be much happier if they could place those sensors somewhere very different, like in the back bumper or somewhere in the cabin, but they wouldn't be very, very good at your adaptive cruise. Kind of necessity.
Yep.
Anyway, who cares about engineering?
Well, we sort of do in the next article, because there was a piece that came out on BBC News that is linked in the show notes that dramatically said, electric car driver turned away from hospital car park. Now, we've included this piece for two reasons. First, this is to do with a hospital in Liverpool called Alderhay, which is a centre of excellence for children's care. That's what they're generally known as in the area. Mm-hmm. And what happened is somebody was trying to use the one multi-story car park on site and was told that electric vehicles have been temporarily banned from the car park because it is installing and improving the sprinkler system in the car park. Now, this is very good news, as anyone who happened to have seen a car park fire at, Luton Airport. But tying in with Luton Airport, how this was dealt with by the individual who spoke to the car owner goes to show what happens when the relentless tide of misinformation from both sides, I am not picking on any particular end of the spectrum here, it is both sides have repeatedly done this, so you're as bad as each other, but they were told to go away because the cars can just spontaneously combust, which isn't the case because something has to happen to make them catch fire. For starters, and secondly, the rate of fires in an electric vehicle is incredibly low. Mm. However, when they do go up, it is incredibly difficult to control. These are just facts. One, great, car parks are being improved across the country. This is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Two, stop spreading nonsense, because that is a bad thing.
It is. The trouble is, the people who listen to us are car people. Journalists, PR people who listen to us tend to be car journalists or car PRs. The challenge is when there are journalists whose, I assume their skills lie elsewhere, outside automotive, and they're the ones writing about this and making up stories. Often in publications where the motoring section is very good and very informed and the people who are writing it are excellent, then all of a sudden in the rest of the newspaper there will be a load of guff.
Yeah. But it also happens on podcasts and YouTube. Mm. I mean, the great thing about both those outlets are that anyone has a voice, but the bad thing is that anyone has a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've been recommended on YouTube one particular channel that just talks absolute nonsense. Yeah, he's got something in excess of 60,000 subscribers, gets tons of views on each video, and it is just lies and nonsense, and it's depressing. It really is depressing because we sit here and we're trying to be balanced, we're trying to be factual, and we feel that's really important in what we do. This is our side gig, but we take this incredibly seriously, and it's depressing to see how quickly and how much lies, nonsense, misinformation just gets spread about, and it's deemed as factual.
Yes. Exactly. One last story before Guilt Minute. And Google Maps is going to introduce a new feature to make finding an EV charger easier.
Good.
Yes. Well, there are specialist sort of EV route finding, which is very good at these things. People like ZapMap and a Better Route Planner. I've never used a Better Route Planner, but I do know ZapMap used it a lot a few years ago. And they show lots of information about the location, the availability, and all these kind of things, charges. Google Maps are introducing some more of that as well, and allowing things like filters to search for hotels with on-site charging, for example, so you can help plan stopovers and that kind of thing.
They're also looking at including real-time info.
Yes.
Which will be very useful.
Yes. Well, hopefully that doesn't... The thing is, I really hope that that comes from a service that already aggregates it like ZapMap, because they've done so much good work.
Last time I used it, I found it iffy.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. I was really disappointed. And if I wanted to get aspects of it, because it had been a while since I used it, if I wanted to get aspects of it that I had previously used, I needed to subscribe.
Oh.
Which was, I understand from a business point of view, but was frustrating on the other hand.
The thing is, for that one, we're occasional users.
Yeah.
You know, if we were using, if we had EVs using them all the time, then it would be worth
it. Would
it,
make more
whatever
sense,
the small subscription would be. Sorry, I don't really use Google Maps, so it doesn't really affect me. Mm-hmm. Well, more to the point, I don't have EV charging, but I don't like Google Maps.
Yeah, it's rolled into certain cars that are out there, because Polestar and Renault have tied in deeply with Android automotive operating systems. That will be coming if you have one of those cars, that will be coming to your vehicle soon.
Which brings us to Guilt Minute. As I said, the quick break in the show where we ask for a tad of financial support to keep the lights on and the hosting running. If you feel the Motoring Podcast worth a small consideration every month, then you can become a patron. Different levels of patron include different levels of commitment from us to you, including being able to watch the show recorded live. We also have a small range of merchandise in our spring store, from stickers to mugs and t-shirts. If you don't have any spare cash, and we do completely understand, then you can help us by following for free from a podcast player to receive every show as they're released, and by liking and rating the show in whatever way your podcast supplier lets you. If you've done all that, some of you do, so thank you very much. Then the last thing you can do is to recommend us to your friends or colleagues.
Thank you, everyone that does.
Mm-hmm.
And a quick update now, rather than at the end, because there are still some very naughty people who don't listen all the way to the end of the show.
That day.
I know. But the consensus appears to be, if you are an Android operating system user, Pocket Casts is the best podcast app of choice on there. I did get several other recommendations, but the one that garnered the most response was Pocket Casts.
It did seem to be the one that I kept seeing as the what people were saying.
Switch to Pocket Casts or tell your friends or whatever, but just pass that out, because Google Podcast is going. Or use YouTube.
Yep.
Anyway, let's take us on to new car news. And we're going to start with the Renault Sim Boys, as the cool kids say. Sorry, I don't know how I'm supposed to properly pronounce Symbioise.
Andrew has teenage children. Symbioise. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Made-up words are difficult, and it's okay for the print mags that just have to write the darn thing.
I look forward to the call from the head of Renault PR to tell me off for how I've done that soon. But this is actually a family-focused hybrid SUV for £30,000, according to the Autocar article. It's essentially the Qashqai. Well, it's Qashqai's size.
Aye, and platform, and powertrains, and
And it fills the apparent gap in the... Renault seems to be trying to do the Mercedes. Let's fill all the niches and sub-niches.
We'll have all the
SUV, they've got the Captur.
Yeah.
And then they have, what's the one that's above that?
I am going to correct you on that one, because it's Captur. Captur. In okay. French, it's Captur. So it's Captur.
Right. Sorry, apologies. And also they have, what is it that's above that? That's the
Arkana. The Arkana is the one, it's the coupe one. But there's also the Austral.
Oh, the Austral, which is larger.
Can anybody imagine? I mean, I know that I've been out the country since these were launched, so I cannot imagine what they look like, other than a Symbioise but bigger and smaller.
Yes.
I know the Austral is the one that looks like a Peugeot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got it has the coupe, whereas this is definitely focused on families. It's a squared off back idea and all that stuff.
The Arcana is just ugly and odd.
Allegedly.
In my humble opinion, of course.
Yes. But
it is.
What they are doing is they are really trying to fill a gap that they have found in their lineup. basically the cash cow gap, because it's so successful. Well, yes, it does feel a little bit that way. You just sort of feel, why is the capture that in there at that point? Why is it not smaller? But whatever.
Because it's the Duke platform repurposed.
Yeah. It's interesting, if you do click the link in the show notes, because they talk here about how, Renault talk about how they designed this, and they use the Renault 5 as a bit of a benchmark in terms of how that was emotionally driven, whereas this is all about being rational and less emotional, because they had a blank page and they are trying to answer a question rather than try and drag us in with, which they've successfully done, with the emotion of the Renault 5 and all the history and all the rest of it. So this is, I think what they're trying to say is, it's not sexy, but it works.
Yeah, that basically is it. And that can be said for everything in that segment, I think. Mm. Can we have a quick moment of pause and consideration for the range-topping model in the UK, which we call the iconic Esprit Alpine?
Is that not... I read that before and I was thinking, why would you include Alpine? Does that not mess and muddy the waters?
I don't know. The iconic spirit of the mountains.
Coming to a city near you.
Yes, exactly.
But to be fair, though, they do talk about... there we are, just making a bit of mockery. But the thing is, only going to weigh just under 1,500 kilograms.
Yeah.
And considering how bloated and heavy so many vehicles are today, this is a good thing. And it appears as though, which of course the manufacturers were always doing, they are taking on efficiency as a key factor here. And with that, weight is evil, basically.
What it's worth saying is that's the rough weight, obviously, for lower end. But there is only one powertrain available, and that's a full hybrid the Renault's E-Tech full hybrid 145 system, which combines a 1.6-litre four-cylinder petrol engine, a multimodal automatic gearbox, whatever that means, two electric CBT. Motors, thank goodness, no. Two electric motors, a 1.2 kilowatt-hour battery, offering up to 145 brake horsepower, an official fuel economy of 61.4 miles per gallon. Your mileage may vary. And Renault claims it's capable of running on electric power around 80% of the time in city driving. Sounds like the Yaris Cross, if it can do that. Mostly running on air and unicorn.
But this will sell. I mean, that is a very popular niche, as the cash cow suggests.
Entry-level models just under £30,000. If nothing else, it'll sell into Motability in the big fleet.
It looks smart, to be fair to it. I mean, it's...
There have been a certain amount of jibes poked at it during this discussion, but actually, it's a perfectly handsome vehicle. There's nothing wrong with it. It doesn't stand out. Oh. It will come in, hopefully many of them will come in this nice kind of bluey-grey colour, and it will be a mass market seller for people who just want a car. And I'm sure it'll be blooming good at it.
Talking about people who just want a car, Alan, do you want to take us to Ferrari?
Yeah, there's a new Ferrari. It's the 12-cylindry, and...
They got AI to write the name as well as draw it, then.
819 horsepower, 9,500 RPM, and it's the successor to the 812 Superfast. It looks like a modern AI Daytona, and that's not a bad thing. I think it's quite a good-looking car, to be perfectly honest.
Left me flatlined, to be fair, but I think that's more the fact that it's yet another Ferrari, yet another... enormous number of power performance figures.
Price.
You sort of go, well, whatever. I tell you what I did like on the exterior is I really like the back window as well as how it goes over the rear flanks.
Mm.
And then that's mirrored in the small portion of roof.
Yes.
As well beyond it. I thought that was really lovely looking shapes. And yeah, I mean, it's not, there was a lot of stick given to it on social media, which I think possibly is something to do with the fact that it's got the strip that the Daytona used to have.
Yeah, but it's not just that. The fact here is, again, the press images that are out, that are everywhere, are either very high quality renderings or they are so doctored that they look like high quality renderings. And as ever with these, something I've come to learn that when any of the Italian brands put out the press photos, the cars always look worse in the press photos than they do in real life. I take these things with a massive pinch or bucket of salt. And I'm sure that when I see one in real life, because I will at some point, when I see one in real life, it'll be, this looks so much better than those awful pseudo AI generated rendered press pictures. It's heavier than a Renault, by the way.
Yes. And it's a V12. We didn't mention that, but it is a V12.
Sorry, that's thought the 12 cylinders as the name was a giveaway. My apologies.
Well, yes, but just to make it absolutely clear. However, why quite so many people got so exercised, I'm not sure. They're never going to see one in real life, and it makes no difference to their lives, but whatever.
Yeah, quite.
I expect there's plenty of things I say that people go, what?
Yeah, there are.
And that's just on this show.
Yeah. I think that in real life it's going to be much cooler, it's going to be much better. I'm looking forward to seeing one.
They'll sell loads as
well. Oh, there's definitely a market for it. There is no way there isn't. I mean, they've
all gone probably by now.
Yeah. Oh, it's probably already sold out for years, I'm sure. It's going to be lovely. I love that it was shown, though. The interior pictures show the blue leather and Alcantara interior.
Did you see how low the screen is, though, in the middle?
Yeah, but you're not looking at that screen.
I hope not. Well, not for long, because you'll be in an accident. I'm going to move us on before this falls down a hole. And this is the news that TWR have come out with the Supercat. It is a 600 brake horsepower wide body Jaguar XJS resto mod thingy that will cost only £250,000. They're going to make just 88 units.
They'll never make 88 units.
And again, the internet's lost its cool.
If they make 8 of these, I'll be amazed. There is no way there is a market for 88. I'm sorry.
There's 88 garages out there that it can sit in.
No.
Appreciate or depreciate.
No, to be honest,
I don't mind this at all, really. I think the front is more successful than the rear three-quarter look. In the photos that, again, I think these look more like a human has taken them than the Ferrari one.
Yes, they do.
But, yeah, is the XJS the car to have done this with? I don't know.
I don't get it. There is no direct line back to racing, even the... I don't understand.
Didn't they race the XJ, TWR?
Yeah, they did. The XJR9. And then the XJR series.
But not this. Yeah.
I mean, there were TWR racing XJSs, but they didn't look like this.
And once again, with anything like this, I am happy someone has done it.
Oh, yes. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
It is. I am delighted that somebody has creatively expressed themselves and given us a different interpretation on it. And I think that's brilliant.
Mm.
Again, it makes absolutely zero difference to me because I will never see one. Mm. I will certainly not be able to afford one. I would be amazed
if we see more than one, if anybody sees more than one.
Maybe at one of those Bicester scrambles.
Yes. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at it and thinking that it's an XJS by Will.i.am, and that's not a good thing.
Okay, then. Well, why don't you take us to points of interest?
Yes. So points of interest this week is not sponsored by Haggerty. I know it's going to look like it. First up, there's...
If they wish to discuss sponsorship, we are open to it if you get in touch via the contact page.
Haggerty has introduced a Radwood Index of Values, and so they have chosen 50 vehicles from the 80s and 90s that can be used as a barometer of what's happening in the marketplace. They come from a number of brands all around the world, different ages, all sorts of stuff. And the idea is so that you can have an idea of what's happening with vehicle prices. I don't know if it's really for investment. I do think it's as much as an interest tracker as anything else.
Mm.
But I do recommend that you go and you visit the piece in the description of it, if only for its lovely charts.
Oh, yeah. Superb chartage. Well done, whoever in Haggerty did all that, because they are great.
There's some really, yes, some nice charts, nicely listed, including a list of all 50 vehicles and their average prices.
Well, do you want to pick one?
Ooh.
I've got this in the wrong order. This is the list of the week.
Oh, is this actually the list of the week? Okay.
Yeah. So I've got this in the wrong order. Sorry, that's my fault.
It's
all right. We'll carry on from here.
Oh, no. Hang on. Oh, you see, I hadn't thought of one. There's so many. There really are so many. Well, there's 50, precisely.
Oh, well, sugar. I've got one. Shall I pick one?
You pick one first.
Okay, my pick is the Lotus Esprit Turbo SE Coupe.
Oh, very good choice. Yes.
But to be fair, there are probably 40 on here I would not be unhappy
no,
with.
No, I would have just about any of them. Pretty much any of them. There's a couple I can really, less fussed about. Okay, I'm going to choose, after a little bit of scrabbling around. Okay, let's choose that one. BMW 850 CSI Coupe. A friend of mine has one that his father bought new, which is a manual in dark blue with the dolphin leather. And it is very lovely. Dolphins. And I would imagine the current guide value on here is £48,000. I would imagine that his may well be worth more because it's got had all the suspension redone by BMW and all the good stuff. Yeah, very, very cool.
You have to check out the list. There are an awful lot on here.
And the stuff at everybody's price point, pretty much everybody's price point, by the way. So this is not unobtainium.
It's from 4,600 all the way up to 93,300.
Roughly. Yeah.
Do you go and enjoy that?
Yes, absolutely. Totally, totally.
I will take us to the lunchtime read, now that I've messed up the order. And this is, again, from Haggerty. As Alan said, they haven't sponsored us, but they have some excellent articles for us to share with you.
Particularly good this week, yeah.
And this one is, in miniature, the 4x4 models of Robert Gunn. And Giles Chapman writes a great piece on...
Giles Chapman always writes a great piece, so let's not...
Well, yes. Yes. But I found this one particularly excellent because he has gone to see Mr. Gunn, who hand-makes these models in 1 to 10 scale using bits and bobs he finds around and converting them into, well, the first picture is a Toyota Land Cruiser, and then we've got Willis G, and then there's just so many. You need to read it. You need to see the process that he goes through and how wonderful it is. And this includes hand-making the engine. And the suspension parts and the exhaust systems, all the rest. He just makes everything to scale. It's absolutely stunning. And the attention to detail is phenomenal. I love reading this sort of stuff where just somebody's artistic and engineering skill has come out and they just produce this wonderful, wonderful things.
There's a 107 Land Rover that he's built. And it's really cool. So that's a pickup truck, kind of pickup truck version of what we'd think of as a Series 1. And there's a description here of him making parts for it. It says, the galvanized plates at the edge of the panel use real zinc squares from Chinese lab suppliers, carefully scissor cut to shape. His ribbed headlamp lenses are from a broken Bratz Dolls Cadillac toy car, bought for a fiver at country fair, while the chrome surrounds a woman-sized stainless steel ring sliced in half. They were so hard to cut with a hacksaw that Gunn gave himself a repetitive strain injury. And if he ever does them again, he'll start with solid silver, which is much softer. And it's wonderful. You wouldn't know any of that looking at it. It looks, it's just these beautiful, beautiful scale models. Really nice.
Yeah.
If you want to see cool scale, sorry, and as an aside, if you want to see cool scale models, one of the latest Cletus McFarlane videos, he goes and he's flying radio control planes and he goes and visits this guy's place. And he has the most amazing radio control planes. Just it's wonderful. Do go have a watch of that as well as a quick bonus lunchtime watch.
That just leaves the and finally.
I feel all disturbed by things being out of order. Yes.
Well, to round out in order.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly. And finally is that Volvo has opened its new World of Volvo. This is the replacement for the previous Volvo Museum. World of Volvo is a bit more central, which is a good thing. You'll lose that beautiful view over the harbour. And it is a collaboration between Volvo Group and Volvo Cars, which was two different entities, to show as many of their interesting historic models as possible. The idea is that it's also going to showcase the present and the future as well, so not just a museum of the past. Be free to enter, although there will be, you will be able to make donations, whatever. There are restaurants, there's a cafe. Can pick up the obligatory coffee and cake. There'll be an auditorium and there'll be conference suites for meetings as well that can be used by, I assume, across the whole of Volvo. The exhibitions, however, it's about £15 to actually see what's being shown. It looks great. Everything from trucks and diggers and cars and stuff. I loved the old Volvo Museum was lovely, but this looks like a fair old upgrade too.
Yeah, they're also going to be including examples of current tech and future tech as well. So it's not just looking at old cars. It's very much about the now and the future, which I think is a brilliant way of doing it. I love the idea of this. I love the execution of the design and how, from the pictures, the layout. And I love the concept behind it of they are trying to make it, yes, it is a Volvo Museum, but they're trying to make it a space for things to happen in.
Yes, and like Mercedes-Benz World and some of those, the one down at Goodwood, for example. It's similar, but with an expanded collection. Mm-hmm. Very cool. That, I believe, is us for the week.
Yes.
Yes. Excellent. So, folks, don't forget that between now and next week, you can leave us any feedback, share your thoughts, or show up Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Remember, you can support us financially via Patreon, and please leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts, YouTube's, or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. I don't know why YouTube was a plural there, but never mind. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is if you search for Crap Windscreen on Twitter or Mastodon, you'll find me there. Also, I am under my actual proper name on LinkedIn, so feel free to reach out because it's LinkedIn. And Alan, if people would like to discuss how we messed up the order with you personally, what's the best way for them to get in touch, even though it was my fault?
Yeah, and do it before I start talking about math and Legos. You can get in touch with me on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Threads, reluctantly, where I'm at AJP Bradley, Bradley. We'll be back very soon, as I said. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.